Hello, I'm Anita Gaidra.
And I'm Don McMahon. Welcome to How Did I End Up Here? A soft Irish rain production for Highland Radio about people from all over the world who, like us, have made Donegal their home. Sometimes in life, the unexpected happens, maybe even thousands of miles from where you are, but it can change the course of your life, putting you on a road you never imagined to a place you never knew existed. You may even end up in Glenties with a golden eagle for a best friend. Here's Pedro Soltani's story.
Just to welcome everybody to the Crown Donegal Vintage and Heritage Day annual field day. You are all welcome now. At the minute, there's potato and onions being served over in the marquee. So you are missing a good dish if you don't go over. We would also like to say thank you to the first appearance from Johnny.
Yes, hello Bob. How are you?
That's Bob.
That's a golden eagle. A male golden eagle, one of the two species of golden eagle in Ireland. Sorry, two species of eagle in Ireland. Golden eagle and white-tailed sea eagle. Golden eagle and sea eagle, they were both very common in Ireland.
My name is Pedro Soltani. I'm from Iran. And the reason I ended up here was the countryside and the lack of traffic lights. When my mother was pregnant, my dad used to read the book at night for her. And the book was about a revolution in Mexico, I believe, or Spain, I can't remember. And the hero of the book called Pedro. So they both decided, when I was born and I was a boy, they called me Pedro.
Pedro left Iran for London in 1970 with the dream of becoming a wildlife photographer. He was part of a foreign studies program funded by the Iranian government, which saw tens of thousands of young people travel to Western countries to further their education. He studied English, did his A-levels, and was in his second year at Chelsea College of Art when the Iranian Revolution erupted in 1978. Funding for most foreign students stopped.
Anybody who wasn't doing something to do with medicine or engineering or something like that, they had to go back. They stopped the money and everything, but I didn't go back. And a friend of mine suggested or told me that go and get a job in the kitchen. You never go cold, you never go hungry. And he was right. Yeah, so I went and I did the Evening Standard, I remember that, and I started looking and I got a job in a restaurant in Hampstead in London as a dishwasher, and I started from there, and I became a chef, and then I rented a workman cafe. Our speciality was bubble squeak, believe it or not. Yes, we were famous for bubble squeak.
Yeah, but unfortunately, for some reason, every golden eagle in Ireland was shot, stuffed, put in a glass case and called the last golden eagle in Ireland. Yeah. Every hotel used to have one.
I met an Irish lady or Irish girl then in England. She was working for me. We started going out, and then I came here for a holiday. It was beautiful. Everything was so green, so relaxed, so laid back. And I thought, that's it. That's a place to live. When I learned that there's only one set of traffic light in the whole county at that time, it was outside Gallagher's Hotel in Letterkenny. And when I learned that, I thought, that's where I want to go. And that's where I want to live. And that's what I did. I loved it so much, yeah. You see, when you live in London, it's just go, 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 you know. You're not living, you're just part of the system. You're just working, you know, here. You live and then you work. I went back that Christmas, and I was here by summer. Sold the house, sold the business, and I moved here. I don't know, it's just something about the island which you fell in love with it. I don't know. Maybe it's people, scenery, the way of life. Here is really relaxed, you know. That's my only regret. I didn't move here before. I should have done that years ago.
Pedro's passion for birds of prey goes back to his childhood. His father was a falconer, and birds were part of his life from a very early age.
I remember I used to climb trees and take little birds from nests, which I'm ashamed now, but in those days, you know, I was trying to hand rear them and everything, things like that.
Just to let you know that homemade butter is also available now for sale. So if you've got the potatoes, now you have the butter.
Now, this is a peregrine falcon, our fastest birds of prey in a stoop. There are two styles of flight. One is called a stoop. The other one is called tail chase or level flight. Believe it or not, the fastest bird in a level flight is a pigeon. So that means if that bird chases a pigeon in a level flight, no chance for this bird to catch the pigeon. So what they do, they go high up and wait until something flies under them. No. You see, when I hoot her, she thinks she's gonna go hunting. She gets excited.
What's the hoot for?
To keep them calm.
Alright.
You know. As I said, they're the fastest birds of prey. They can stoop at 120 kilometers an hour.
When he moved to Glenties, he wasted no time finding the right location for his new life.
That's what I bought the place, actually, because it was next door to the graveyard. So I don't have neighbors to annoy. Because when you keep birds and dogs and animals, usually neighbors are, yeah.
Laurie, is this improved from the time you were there last?
Well, I had a good enough Laurie last time.
You had a good filler too.
Excuse me?
Yes.
How strong would that biggest bird be?
Sorry?
How strong would that big bird be? What's it called?
How strong?
Yeah.
I mean, they can kill a fox.
Whoa.
So that's how strong they are.
So about the same as a dog? Wee dog?
Yeah. Yeah. They can actually kill a dog too. Yeah.
It began with one injured peregrine. That's how it started. Well, I nursed it back, but it couldn't be released to the wild because it badly damaged. And I swapped that with a buzzard, a friend who was living just in near the other side of Donegal town, George Luke. I swapped that bird with a buzzard and I started flying the buzzard and started from there, and people bring more injured bird or damaged bird, and then to eventually, you know, when you ended up with more than a couple of birds, then you have to think to build the proper aviaries and facilities, and I became a rescue center. Because if I don't take them, nobody else will, and they will be knocked over the head, you know.
Today, Pedro's aviary is probably larger than his house. In one outbuilding are chest freezers full to the brim with frozen rabbits, day-old chicks, and mice. What was once a child's bedroom has been converted into an incubator room. He cares for about 37 birds, most of which have been injured and will never be able to return to the wild.
Sometimes you get 3-4 birds a year, sometimes you get nothing, you know. But what do you say, by rule of the thumb, if you can pick up a bird of prey off the ground, that bird is 70% dead, you know. So it depends a lot on their injuries, you know.
Cut the bill off a little bit.
Yeah. What's the buzzard? It's not your ordinary.
That's a common buzzard.
Okay.
It's not a very good.
Not a typical example.
No, that buzzard, that's... I think he fell off a nest.
Right.
And then it was molded by a dog. Because the tip of the wing, that bit of his wing is missing. And that's been like for 2-3 years now.
Yeah.
So he has this fear of humans.
Birds of prey, they have to be on the top condition to be able to survive in the nature, because they're on the top of the food chain. They're hunters. So they have to be 100% to be able to survive in the wild. I never say no. No. I never say no to an injured bird. We have to put them down. If they're badly damaged. But I never say no. Most injuries are poisoning or accident. Barbed wire flying into the glass, hit by a car. Yeah, but poisoning, like no farmers actually target a golden eagle. Nobody put poison for birds of prey. People put poison out for foxes and crows. But because they put it on a raw meat, eagles or buzzards or birds of prey eat that too. You know, that's the problem.
That's a kestrel. That is the commonest birds of prey in Ireland. You see them often hovering like that, scanning the ground. They are the most amazing birds. They have the ability to see by ultraviolet light, because their main prey, which is a mice and shrews, they're difficult to see in a tall grass.
Right.
But small mammals, they urinate as they move about. So they can trace the urine by ultraviolet light and pinpoint their prey. So that, for that reason, I call that Isaac, after Isaac Newton. And that's the male, the one at the back is a female.
Right.
So Mr. and Mrs. Kestrel. You see the difference between color, the head?
You know, in England, you can't walk on people's land and, you know, you're not free, you know. But at the very beginning when I moved here, I used to go and ask people, can I walk on your land? And they were looking at me like, are you mad or something? Why are you asking me? I said, well, you own the land. Now they know me, you know. They call, oh, that's the madman with the bird.
One day, after he and his birds had visited a local school, he overheard a little boy in a supermarket point him out to his mother. That's Pedro. He has a barn owl, and he says we mustn't shoot them. That was the moment Pedro realized his message was getting through, and he decided to close down his kebab shop and dedicate himself to educating people about the conservation of birds of prey.
I think myself, education is the only hope for the survival of any wildlife. You know, so if we can educate our youngsters, then we might have a hope. Yeah. Actually, I was at the show, and this little boy was telling his mom, oh, mom, can I have one of them? Please, can I have one of them? And I said to him, look, young gentleman, when you're 21 and you have your own house,
and a very understanding wife, come to me and I'll give you a bird. He looked at me and he said, but you will be dead by then.
I used to go to Glen Bay National Park with the birds, but I realized people who go to Glen Bay National Park, I was trying to convert, you know. People who go to Glen Bay National Park, most of them, they know more than I do. And so I decided, plus, we need farmers, really. We need, if we want golden eagle or any species of birds of prey to survive, we need farmers. So I decided to leave Glen Bay and go to agricultural shows, vintage shows, places like that. Yeah, you have to feed them, clean them. The one who can fly, exercise them, you know. Now you get up six, it depends again if it's a breeding season like now. I have to get up very early, put food, because you have to feed them 2-3 times a day to encourage pair bonding and all that. So I start about 6 in the morning, you know, do the first feeding, and then I go back to bed for a couple of hours, and then I get up and then I clean them and feed the rest. And if I have to exercise any bird, I'll take them out, exercise them. That's my day. It just varies day by day. Bad weather, we don't do nothing. We just sit and watch telly. Say if you're into shooting or fishing, when the season is over, you put your gun or you put your fishing rod in the cupboard until the next season. But with birds of prey, it's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Yeah, no holidays.
Do you want to come on? I'll show you my incubator room. So that's the incubator room. Can you close that door, please? That's incubator rooms. One of them, the first egg is due to hatch on the egg number one is due to hatch on 4th of April. They usually incubate their eggs for about 32 days. So we have the weight of the egg fresh. An egg loses 15%
at the moment. I'm trying to breed a pair of Merlin, a pair of Harris Hawk, and a pair of Peregrine.
And we just follow it.
That's my dream. And anybody, any falconer's dream, to breed Peregrine. I have a pair, but nothing yet. But we just put them together, give them absolute security, safety, and good food. We spend about 3,000-4,000 a year on food which you have to buy. That includes the old chicks and mice or rats.
When Pedro's parents came to visit him, they found several things very different from what they were used to.
When my father came, he was so delighted at the beginning because everything was green and rain, because back home it's all dust and all that, you know. And he said to me after 2 or 3 days, he said, is it going to stop the rain? Because it just rained and rained and rained for a whole week. Back home, men kiss each other when they meet, but they don't kiss women. So my dad, everybody used to come to visit us, he used to shake their hand and kiss, and they were going, all right. So I had to tell him, look, don't kiss men.
But his parents, and his father especially, were happy with how Pedro's life had turned out.
They could understand, because that's all I want, that's what I always wanted to do, to live in the countryside and keep lots of animals. When I was very young, that was my ambition. But then when he saw me actually settling down and following his footsteps, then yeah, he was very happy. And well, to me, home is when you're happy. So this is my home, because I'm very happy here.
How Did I End Up Here is a Soft Irish Rain production for Highland Radio. It was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television license fee.